Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Mm-hmm. Hey there, everyone. John Hanson in for John Williams on this Thursday afternoon, 108. From the Skyline Studio, 18 floors above Wacker Drive and the Chicago River. Thank you so much for joining us here on the stream. While the White Sox play on the mothership. I'll be here until 3 o'clock. That's the way that goes. And Ro and Anna will be on after us here on the stream. And then imagine back on WGN Radio after the White Sox game concludes. And happy Thursday to you. Just another gorgeous day across Chicago. A little bit warmer than yesterday. We got that gust coming out of the... Well, I don't know where it's coming out of. Mike Hammernick will tell us. He's going to be joining us in just a little bit to talk about not only the forecast here with the Labor Day weekend in store. Maybe some rain showers. Might be darting between drops here this week, and he'll tell us all about that. But of course, Hurricane Dorian as well. I just saw a headline on CNN that this thing expected now to slam into Florida as a Category 4 storm, how it kind of missed Puerto Rico off to the east and into warmer weather, warmer water, I should say, and that caused it to strengthen and will continue to do so as it makes its way towards Florida. We'll get Mike in to break it all down. A little bit later on, Heather Cerrone from the Daily Line is going to talk about the mayoral address tonight, the address from Lori Lightfoot yesterday on her first 100 days in office and what comes next for the city council. And she's going to reveal just how deep the budget deficit is. And it's a lot. It's definitely going to surpass $1 billion after Mayor Emanuel's administration pegged it more around $700 million. We'll get into all that. Also talk to the folks at the Adler Planetarium. And apparently there's a clown roaming around Logan Square, which is concerning to me, but apparently is beloved in the neighborhood, which I have a hard time believing. But Mina Bloom's going to talk about that. Just a clown roaming around Logan Square.
Does it have a big red balloon by any chance?
No, yeah, I think it does. I mean, what clown doesn't? I mean, the photos kind of look a little freaky.
I was going to say there are a lot of clowns roaming around over there, but...
Well, those are usually with handlebar mustaches. Yes, exactly. And going into the Owl at 3 in the morning. Is that still around? Do you guys frequent Logan Square bars by any chance?
Yes, it's still open.
Okay, it is still open, right. Well, you hear their voices. Lauren Lapka, how you doing in the traffic room?
I'm good. I'm now concerned that Pennywise is roaming around Chicago, though.
Yes, I know. We got to get the breakdown of it. I was more surprised at the reaction to the story that he's like this beloved character in the neighborhood. Because if it was in my neighborhood, I used to live in Humboldt Park, I would be immediately on the horn with 911.
Well, don't you remember a few years ago there were like a few people dressing up in clown, like creepy clown suits, right, with weapons across the country?
Right, exactly. And the weapons obviously would be the delineation between scared, right, and not. But I just assume that every clown is up to no good if it's just wandering through the hood.
Every clown but Bozo.
Yes,
he's the only one that we would walk up and hug.
Bozo, I'd give a big old hug. I'd do whatever he wanted. Even if he had a weapon, that I'd be fine with. I'd be like, he's got a good reason.
Where are we going, Bozo? Let's do this. Bozo's got your back.
Bozo's got a machete, but he's just clearing some brush. Like, I'm giving Bozo the benefit of the doubt without a doubt. Ryan, it's good to see you. The last time we talked and the previous couple times, you've usually been out on assignment covering some terrible story here or there. Nice to see you here in the newsroom.
Thanks. Keeping an eye on Dorian, too. Who knows? Could get that call any moment.
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm just kind of, shocked just because a couple days ago we were looking, maybe it'll hit Puerto Rico, tropical storm, week into one. But I think that's what it is. Move to those warmer waters. And we're seeing those pictures of all the empty shelves in Florida. And I'm glad we take these things a little more seriously now. I'm imagining Katrina and Rita were kind of the turning points of that, where everyone, no one messes around with that stuff anymore.
Not fun, by the way, when you're the reporter arriving on the scene just before and you can't get anything at the Walmart. You're trying to stock up and fill up your truck and everything's gone.
I've never been on a hurricane assignment. How does that work? I mean, imagine you
chaos.
Guys have no problem getting a hotel room, right? How does it work? Like, I mean, you guys are obviously going into danger. Do local officials turn a blind eye or just let you do what you do? Is there any point where they're like, get out of there?
You're on your own. Now, ABC's got a lot of tips, and I learned because, I'm the Midwest guy, headed down. Harvey was my first one that I covered, and I learned to travel in packs. Mm-hmm. We did not do that with Michael. I was kind of on my own, but I was a little further away. But, you land, and you try to scoop up as much stuff as possible because you have to understand when this thing hits, power's going to go out, gasoline's going to be an issue. So you kind of plot as much and plan as best you can before this thing comes so that you're ready to be sitting in a car. And I learned the first time not to get the, when you get the rental car, don't get the little, you know, Escort. You got to get, you got to get something with a little more girth because you don't know what you're going to be driving through. And each one's different, you know, it really is.
Do people think you're crazy when you're there?
Oh, yeah. And the hotels are interesting, too, because here's the thing. They're going to send me, I'll have no idea when I'm coming back, right? So it, I'm kind of booking day to day, which isn't great because everything is full at that point. So, you know, a lot of times the hotels lose power, which if you've ever been in a hotel that hasn't had power for 2 days, that's a movie right there. You want to make a movie, you get to learn some people real close because no air conditioning. A lot of them have dogs walking around. It's a completely different beast when you've got no power at a hotel.
Yeah, send the Logan Square Clown down there. We got a real good movie. No, that I just is there staff at these hotels? They keep like a skeleton crew or something?
For Harvey, it was interesting because it was the same staff. They basically said, look, we need you to just stay here. So the same woman who checked me in was the woman who was at the Starbucks counter, who was at the dining hall, was at the, you know, was helping with the cleaning stuff, and they just kind of pop up. But as this progresses and as you're out of power for a longer period of time or as supplies are cut off, like I know for Harvey, and don't feel bad for me. I mean, it's not awful.
There's people way worse than the reporter, yes.
But, you know, the food menu starts to shrink.
Yes.
You start off and you've got all these options for you at the whatever the one hotel or the one restaurant that's open, and then all of a sudden day three we don't have that, we don't have that, we don't have that, and you know.
Yeah, because I just always wondered, because you know when you have big press events, obviously, you know, there's, well, at, like the White House, they call it Pebble Beach, where everyone lines up and everyone's got the same shot, but they don't do that for hurricanes. You can kind of just position yourself wherever you need to be. Obviously it's a little different, radio versus TV, of course, but it's not like they're all in it together helping each other. I mean, I'm sure there's reporters that know each other and help each other out throughout if there's any issues, but yeah, you're on your own. They just sent you there, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And that first time I went, I was not prepared. I did not wear the proper shoes. I did not have the proper gear. I've learned quite a bit since that.
Speaking of hotels, and Lauren, I'd like your opinion. And Elif, good afternoon, by the way. I haven't said hello to our wonderful producer, Elif. How are you doing this afternoon?
Good afternoon. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. That's just basic courtesy. 10 minutes late. Okay. Mm-hmm. Marriott is banning small plastic shampoo bottles over the next few years, and they're going to go the route of having a big bottle kind of just in the shower to use. And I want to know, because for me, I love staying in a hotel. We talked about this off air, but I love I know Airbnb is big, and I've done a couple of those in different places. But there's something about staying in a hotel, having all your amenities there, unless you're there in the middle of a hurricane, that I absolutely love. And even the little bottles, I'll use the whole darn thing if I can. I'll just because, you know, at home I try and, you know, minimize how much shampoo and conditioner to use. I don't, you know, try to use an abundance of it. But man, at the I just fill my whole hand up. I don't have that much hair, but lather it up. It's as big as can be. So this I feel is somewhat cheapened, and I don't know if you guys feel the same way, you know, and now losing the small bottles. Lefka, do you like staying in hotels and stealing the bottles? Do you feel like this is, you know, now it's kind of like the gym where you're just using a communal shampoo and conditioner?
Well, I used to really love taking it home because you never know when you're going to need it. But now I feel like I have way too much.
Okay.
And sometimes, like, I use all of it before I feel like my hair is actually getting clean. So I'm with you on the whole lather it up, but I feel like they're kind of watered down almost.
Yeah.
So you need to use a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. And I do used to like to keep them in my toiletry bag, but you're right. I have so many of them now that I can't possibly run out. And then they should send me instead of Ryan Burrow. I'm well prepared for whatever hits us wherever we need it. Elif, I know you're a big fan of the little bottles.
I like them, but I don't like asking for more because I don't like to bring them home with me. It's just an added weight to my luggage.
Do you ask for more? Who asks for more? You mean like if you stay there for multiple days?
Yeah, some people keep asking for more, like my mom. She loves hotel shampoos.
So she just calls the front desks and says, I'm out of it, or just give me more, please?
Well, if she sees the cleaning lady in the hallway, she'll stop her.
I was in a Holiday Inn in West Virginia once.
Uh-huh.
On the last day of its existence. It was really weird. Like, we went out for dinner, we came back, and they were taking the sign down.
Wait, did you?
Literally.
Wow. Did you know when you booked it that this was okay?
No, we were on our way to Washington or something.
It's sort of frightening.
Yeah, we went out, like, to the Rustler for dinner with the kids and came back, and they're taking down the Holiday Inn sign.
That's really funny.
Did you get to walk away with the bed or anything?
I mean, so the next morning, I forget what it was we wanted something extra of, we needed, and the woman's, like, had a cart full of all this stuff. She goes, take whatever you want. We're done.
Close it up shop. Right. Oh, that's incredible. I was at a restaurant once where they didn't tell us, but it seemed pretty obvious that they, you know, I couldn't get cheese on my cheeseburger. They're like, oh, we're all out. Our new shipment comes tomorrow. And then my mom asked for fries. They're like, well, we don't have any fries. We have tater tots. And then eventually they just brought out on a napkin and wrote down a few things. We should have been the wiser. We just thought it was going to, you know, we're late on some shipments. Next day it was closed. Yes. Well, they wrote it down.
It was closed the next day.
It was closed the next day. I mean, I guess all the warning signs were there. We just certainly missed out on them. Okay, we'll talk more. Oh, go ahead.
So my mom and I stayed at an Airbnb for the first time for both of us in France a couple of months ago.
Bougie.
I know. And it was a beautiful experience. It was so clean. Mm-hmm. The woman who let us in was great. And my mom really wanted extra shampoos. And I kept,
from the Airbnb.
Yeah. And I kept saying, Mom, I'm like, we're in France. What if they find it annoying that we need more stuff? And then my mom said, just ask her, God.
Darn it.
And so I texted the host and she said, yeah, sure. Like an hour later, when we get home, there are three little shampoos outside our door.
Wow, that's a good Airbnb host.
She was awesome.
Or property manager, because I asked for extra toilet paper when we were in Wisconsin on a cabin. It took 2 days. By then, the emergency is over, I'll just say.
Oh, God.
Everything else was great, and I've had great experiences at Airbnb. Yeah, we did a little lake house cabin, but it's a little different, you know, and that's why I like staying in hotels. You can always ask the front desk, unless they're out of business or going out of business the next day, you can ask for some extra stuff, and that's fine, and they usually smile. Even if they don't smile when they walk away, it's okay. They have to smile at your face when you do it, and that's how I like to be pampered. Quick commercial break, then we'll talk with Mike Hammernick about Hurricane Dorian and plenty more on the stream here on WGNradio.com. 720 WGN, little Radiohead to bring us back in. John Hanson in for John Williams on this really nice Thursday afternoon across Chicago. Thanks so much for listening. I'm in till 3 o'clock. Then Ro and Anna will be here. And then after the White Sox, we'll all join hands and rejoin WGN 720. But you got us on the stream right now. He's one of the best meteorologists in the business, but also has one of the best broadcasting names of all time. I love saying it. Mike Hammernick. Mike, are you there?
Hey, John. Good morning. Good afternoon.
It's a great... So I do a little PA announcing for the Blackhawks from time to time, and Hammernick is one of those just real strong names that really just is a great way to introduce someone.
Well, I can thank my father for that.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. All right, so, man, we'll talk about the Labor Day forecast in just a few moments, but this Dorian situation just a couple days ago seemed like, it'd be a tropical storm. Was it past Puerto Rico? And
right.
Maybe strengthened to a one. We'll see what happens, but this thing really looks to be taking dead aim and a strong storm at that.
Yeah, it's going to be over open waters for quite a period of time, and that's one of the reasons it will be strengthening. Also, very favorable upper air conditions for the storm, too. And it's going to be over open water now for the next 3 days or so before it threatens any land, which would be next up would be the Bahamas and then Florida after that. And this morning, the confidence was pretty high. It looked like the models were really zeroing in on the East Coast, somewhere between West Palm Beach, East Coast of Florida, somewhere between West Palm Beach and Daytona. And then some new information starting to trickle in now that kind of throws a loop into that.
Of course.
A wrench into that. Yeah, that, Miami, perhaps the Keys still could be in play. So we're going to have to watch this one closely and see exactly how this ends up. But right now, current thinking still is for somewhere along the East Coast of Florida that the storm will make landfall sometime late Sunday or on Monday, according to the latest computer model guidance.
Yeah, as predictable as we like to think these storms are, they still obviously do throw some loops on meteorologists, I imagine. And, and I imagine part of that uncertainty is just the vast distance that these things have to cover and the different systems that affect which direction a hurricane is going to go.
Yeah, and the steering currents, typically with hurricanes, the steering currents are so weak, you know, only 5 to 10 miles per hour, because that's where they grow the best. And then you just get one little subtle shift in the wind and it can steer the storm in a much different direction. So that's what makes these hurricanes so tricky. If there was a strong upper level flow, number one, they wouldn't develop because that kills hurricanes, and that would be make it a much more predictable event. But so you get these light winds aloft and the steering winds, and that's what makes hurricanes and tropical storms so difficult to forecast sometimes.
I've been a weather nerd for some time, and I like to play weather stuff on WCIU, just reporting forecasts, but I'm not a meteorologist. But, you know, I just, by reading all about these things, you know, you start to gain an appreciation for them. Some hurricanes and tropical systems move very slowly and drop a bunch of different rain, and that can be even more damaging, of course, than the winds themselves. This one seems to be moving at a pretty okay clip. Is 13 miles an hour average for a hurricane? I'm just trying to put in a sense about how quickly this one's moving along.
No, that's a pretty good clip, and as long as it stays in that range, the rain threat may... We're not going to see a repeat of what we saw in Houston, of course, with that 40 to 50-inch rainfall when the storm just stalled right offshore of Houston. That would led to a disaster a couple of years ago there. But right now, the storm's moving at a good clip, expected to continue to move at a good clip, although the latest information we're getting that's just starting to trickle in kind of slows it down a little bit and steers it a little bit further south. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. But right now, the official forecast is still bringing it into the eastern coast of Florida sometime around late Sunday and Monday.
You've had a great career as a meteorologist, of course, spanning a couple decades, not to date you, of course, at all, Mike, but how much better are we at predicting these things than we were when you started, 5 years ago, we'll say?
much, much better.
Yes.
The amount and the quality of the data that we have today compared to when I first started, remarkably better. We were looking at things that were on a scale of, 20 or 50 kilometers, and now we can get it down to 1 kilometer data. So it's been incredible. It's like taking your old flip phone and comparing it to an iPhone. The technology is weather-wise, as far as the data that we use, has increased that dramatically too.
Of course, it remains to be seen. I shouldn't say of course, but September 2nd is Labor Day, and ironically, September 2nd, 1935 was Labor Day, and that's a very famous hurricane in Florida history, of course. The Labor Day hurricane. Not that this one is going to be the same one, but just kind of ironic, I guess.
One of the worst ones, in U.S. history, absolutely. So hopefully we won't have a repeat of that this year. Right now it looks like, Hurricane Center is kicking out a Category 4 storm, and that's what the models are also indicating, that we'll have a slow strengthening, because there's really nothing to slow this thing down yet or keep it from strengthening. It's going to be over open waters for the next 3 days north of the Bahamas and favorable conditions aloft, too. So, unfortunately, a dangerous storm, looks like, for the east coast of Florida.
Even if we get a little rain on our Labor Day, certainly nothing compared to what they're dealing with down there. But we do always like to know what's going to be happening on our 3-day weekends. And looks like a cool start to it, and then a little bit better towards the end of it.
Yeah, we do have a front that's going to be popping up right on top of us on Saturday and Saturday night. We'll be developing over us. And then it kind of moves off in the latter half of the weekend. So the best chance of rain, it looks like, is going to be on Saturday night. Rain chances ramp up on Saturday afternoon, they'll peak Saturday night, then drop off on Sunday morning. So we're not talking a washout as far as our weather is concerned this Labor Day weekend, but it looks like that Saturday night window there is going to be the highest precipitation chances. And then warming up on Labor Day, perhaps into the 80s, but maybe only low 70s on Saturday as well as Sunday. And the rain looks like it's going to be light. It's not going to be a real heavy variety. So I guess we've got that going for us.
Yeah, certainly.
Concerned.
So, Mike, I got to ask before I let you go, as a meteorologist, how often do your friends or your family come to you with direct questions about what the weather's going to be like, or to blame you if it's bad?
Oh, all the time. Well, they don't blame me so much.
That's good.
They're very kind and very gracious.
Right.
But no, all the time. And
does it bother you, or are you okay doing it every time?
Not at all. Not at all. It's part of, it comes with the territory, and I enjoy it. Sure, I enjoy helping out friends and family and any kind of listeners, too, with any information I can pass along. Absolutely.
Well, you've certainly helped us out. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
All right, John, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Have a good one. Mike Hamernick, of course, of Channel 9. Always fascinating to talk to Mike and the great meteorologists at Channel 9 about what's going on. And we'll, of course, here on WGN, be keeping track of Dorian throughout the next few days, not only with our news team, but, of course, the meteorologists over at Channel 9. And everyone will be having conversations about it. I'm sure all the hosts that are getting ready for their weekend shows are prepping for hurricane coverage of some kind and bringing you the best context that we can. I imagine a lot of you might have been traveling. I know my good friend, and I'm currently the co-host over at the Jam, filling in for a little bit, and Felicia Lawrence was planning a big Labor Day trip to the Bahamas, which, you know, Bahamas, you know, for the most part, you can usually get away with that on Labor Day, but it is hurricane season. 312-981-7200, just curious if anyone has had to cancel their plans, is thinking about canceling them, especially with some uncertainty in this forecast. Obviously, you heard Mike mention that Central Florida is certainly affected by this, but maybe even Southern Florida, and who knows, this thing, some models still see this thing veering to the north. That could impact your travels to Georgia, Carolinas. 312-981-7200, if maybe you're thinking about changing your Labor Day plans. Elf, I cannot imagine looking forward to a long three-day weekend, and at the last minute, finding out that I wasn't going to get to steal some shampoo bottles from the local hotel. I just had to change plans because of the weather. You ever had to do that?
Change plans because of the weather?
Yeah.
Yes.
Really?
I've had to, well, I had a flight canceled coming back, and okay. I was worried that I would be missing my class.
Okay. And how'd it turn out?
It ended up being okay. It only got postponed one day, so.
Yeah, these poor people worrying about the hurricane. You're like, I missed class.
Yeah.
I know. It must be.
It's never been, knock on wood, that serious.
I'm just amazed. So Felicia was telling me that her flight hasn't been canceled yet. I mean, I understand they were kind of waiting to the last minute. That's advantageous to the airline, and maybe things will change. But, I mean, this is a flight going into the Bahamas. It was supposed to be tomorrow and into Saturday. And I can't imagine, just cancel the darn thing. Give everyone their money back. Put people up to ease of mind.
Flight or travel insurance?
Yeah. Hopefully. I never do it. Never done it in my life.
It's not that expensive. It's like...
It always seems cheap. It seems reasonable, but I'm just so untrustworthy. Or I just always feel like I don't need to do it. And even though it's like $9.99 for a $1,000
trip. Yeah, you always feel like you don't need to do it. It won't happen to me, blah, blah, blah.
Bertrand, do I need to do travel? Should I be doing that? You're a traveler.
You know, I don't usually do it, but having now working with a lot of people, it comes in handy. I've got a couple of people going to the Prague Hawks game who might not be able to make it now.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got insurance, so they'll be okay.
But aren't there some stipulations? I guess you have to check on the fine line.
Oh, yeah.
Usually you've got to prove it, yeah.
It's got to be health reasons or something. It can't be that you just, well, I mean, with the policies we work with, that you just change your mind.
Right.
You can't do that.
Well, you could find a good doctor or write you a note, perhaps.
You know, but a lot of credit card companies now will do it automatically with purchases.
Oh, that's nice.
So if you buy, I think, Chase Sapphire, I think, if you purchase your travel through them, you're automatically insured.
Boy, Sapphire sounds like a good color to have on the credit card. I'm still working on silver.
No, I don't think it's gold. It doesn't have to do with that. That's the entry level. Sure. They started Sapphire.
Sure. Yes, exactly. Sure sounds fancy. WGN, at least the stream version of it, WGNradio.com. John Hanson in for John Williams from the Skyline Studio, 18 floors above Wacker Drive in the Chicago River. 136, I'm here till 3, then Ro and Anna take over, and then everyone merges back together at the conclusion of the White Sox game. Really quickly, before we get to Heather Cherone, who is my good, dear friend, and we're going to talk all things Lori Lightfoot and Chicago politics in just a moment. Yesterday, when Mr. J-Dub, John Williams, was hosting his own show, he was doing a interesting conversation about the expungement of marijuana convictions off people's records, and he had a texter that wanted to know that if they got their marijuana conviction expunged from the record in Cook County, would they now be able to apply for a FOID card? And what was it, Elif? I mean, John probably didn't know the answer, then I imagine the guest didn't quite know for sure what the answer was.
Right, we had Code for America on, yeah. She didn't know what the answer.
But you don't want to speak out of turn, of course, so if you don't have it in front of you.
Right, so they referred me to the state's attorney's office.
And what did you find, Elif?
I found that you can apply for a FOID card.
Okay.
As long as pot is the only conviction on your record.
Right. If you've been charged with robbing a bank before and a marijuana conviction, losing the latter doesn't help the former.
Right.
Okay. That's good to know. So that's what I imagine. I think that's what expungement means. It gets off the record for those sorts of things, for a FOID card, for educational opportunity, for housing opportunities. I imagine that is what makes it so important.
There you go. So that's what the state's attorney's office had to say to me.
Cool.
So there you go.
Thanks, state's attorney's office. We appreciate the feedback. Now to my good friend, Miss Heather Sharon of thedailyline.net. Heather, how you doing? Glad things are so boring and easy right now this week here for you.
Boring these dog days of summer, isn't it, John?
Oh, my God. I think the last time we talked about how things had slowed down. And, of course, now Lori Lightfoot with her first 100 days wrapping up yesterday with an interesting talk about the city. And then, of course, she's got a speech tonight, right, Heather? But it's about what she isn't going to say that's making as much news as maybe what she is going to say.
That's right. So we will finally learn, after months and months of speculation, how big the city's deficit actually is and what she initially plans to do about that. However, I know this might surprise you. Chicago mayors are not kings or queens, and she doesn't have the ability to do much of anything, but she can ask the city council and the General Assembly to help her fill that gap. So that's what we expect to hear tonight.
All right, so obviously the number that they're going to give us will have some sticker shock to it, and it probably should. Part of it's because it's maybe not the number that we've been hearing over the last couple of years or months, right? Before, because there was some confusion or at least some disagreements between the passing administration and the incoming administration of what that number truly was.
Right. So when Mayor Rahm Emanuel left office, the last sort of set of budget figures that he released warned Lori Lightfoot or whoever the next mayor was going to be was about $600 million was going to come due to the city's four pension funds. And essentially, state law changed and now requires that those funds be put on a path to being 90% funded by a certain date. And to do that, that means that payment schedule is going to ramp up quite a bit. So we knew that we were sort of starting at a floor of $600 million. And since then, you and I and everybody else with a 401k has sort of watched the stock market go up and down and up and down with everything that's going on in Washington. And that has taken a toll on the city's pension funds, we think. So we think that they hadn't been making their investments quite as much money as had been anticipated, so that added some percentage to the deficit. And then there are what I like to call unknown knowns. We know that the teachers need a new contract. We know that they're in line for somewhere along the lines of a 16% pay raise over the next 4 years or so, so that's going to add to that number, as well as the fact that police and firefighters in Chicago have been working without a contract for more than 2 years at this point. So not only are they going to want a pay raise, as they're probably entitled to, but they're also going to be looking for a retroactive pay raise to the last 2 years. So that's also going to add some percentage to the city's deficit.
So what that final
number is really anybody's guess until Lori Lightfoot takes the stage tonight.
I imagine most people are imagining that it'll be over $1 billion. I guess the question I was going to ask, Heather, before I rudely interrupted you, was, so it's not like Mayor Emanuel's administration lied about the number. They just didn't cook the books as fully or didn't play out what we know to be coming up to give the most accurate depiction of it. Is that a good way to interpret it?
You know, everything changes. You know, it's sort of lies, damn lines, and statistics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on how you sort of add up that deficit. I think that what people knew was coming was this Mashin pension bill, and there should be no mistaking the fact that Lori Lightfoot knew that was coming. Everybody in Chicago knew about it. You know, every reporter at City Hall has been writing about it for months. So that wasn't a surprise. I think the question is, how do you bridge the gap that we knew about it, and has that gap significantly widened since then? And the mayor says that it has, and that the city is going to need not only some sort of tax increase, and we don't know exactly what that means, but you will also need help from Springfield in figuring out ways to bridge that gap. And those are all things that are very much up in the air at this point.
I got a dumb question, Heather.
Hit me with it. No such thing.
Yeah, I don't know. This one's going to be bad. So there's so let's say it's $1 billion. $1 billion, right?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot of money. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
There's about a little less than 3 million of us living in this city, right? You divide those two numbers and you get a number that for some people, I mean, look, it comes out to $333 is what I was looking at per resident, which I know to some people that's a lot of money for sure. And I'm not saying it's not a lot of money to me, but I don't know. It's a big number, but it doesn't seem insurmountable to me for some reason. Am I wrong?
Well, I think it is much bigger than the city has faced any time recently. So if we cast our minds back to 2011, when Rahm Emanuel took office after Mayor Richard Daley had retired, he took office with a budget deficit of about $630 million.
And is that for one individual year, or is that an accumulation of debt?
That was what the city needed in 2011 to balance its books.
Got
and now
it.
The city is not like the federal government. They can't just, you know, sort of operate in the red and, you know, the banks will float them. Certainly the city borrows money, but that it's not as if it can pass an unbalanced budget. That's not how city finances work. So to bridge that gap, Mayor Emanuel had to push through a lot of draconian cuts, the legacy of which we're still dealing with. He closed mental health clinics. He raised fines for not having a city sticker on your car. He, raised fines if you didn't pay that city sticker, ticket. So those are still things that are very much with us. And in many ways, Lori Lightfoot took office promising to reverse a lot of that legacy. And now she's confronted with a budget crisis, which by all accounts is significantly worse than when Mayor Emanuel took office and really sort of said, you know, the city has to take drastic steps to keep it from sort of spiraling into sort of an solvable circle of debt. So she's got a really big challenge right in front of her. And like you said, she's only been in office 101 days as of right now.
So she's in a little bit of a corner. And I feel like part of it is she's put herself in that corner, but maybe she wanted to, because, and I'll explain that the idea is she's very much for the everyday Chicagoan. She's been working to reduce what those fines are, to limit them a little bit, to really fight for the lower class or middle class workers here in the city. But that does close revenue streams. So the question is, then she's in this corner, is she going to come forward with new ideas tonight? Is this going to end up with another property tax increase, cutting expenses, which doesn't seem to be like something she's willing or wanting to do? I guess this is the billion-dollar question.
Yeah. So she has made sort of small announcements where she said, look, I found $6 million in the Department of Fleet and Facility Management, and we're tightening our belt here, and we're imposing a hiring freeze until we get our arms around what's happening. So she has taken steps, which she says is designed to make city government more efficient and effective, and that's part of what she's going to say tonight, I am sure, you know, to promise the Chicago residents, look, I am making city government work as effectively and as penny-pinchingly as possible, but we still need additional revenue. And what I expect she will say tonight is that she's going to ask Springfield and Governor J.B. Pritzker to allow the city to levy a sales tax on certain services, such as accounting services or high-end legal services, not necessarily like a haircut. So when you get your haircut, you don't pay sales tax like you would if you bought,
just any old good. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that would also help the city raise revenue. I think she will also ask Springfield for the ability to raise the real estate transfer tax, which will be very controversial because homelessness advocates or people trying to get people off the streets of Chicago had hoped the city would raise that tax on high-end sales, so like million-dollar homes, to fund more services to help people get off the street and to break that cycle of homelessness. However, Lori Lightfoot has sort of let it be known that the city's financial condition might be a bit too precarious for that, and she might need that money to help balance the city budget. So that's also a possibility. I think the last resort will be a proposal for a property tax increase, because let's not forget, in 2015, Rahm Emanuel pushed through the biggest property tax increase in Chicago history, which homeowners are now feeling the full brunt of. It was phased in over 4 years to basically keep the city's police and firefighter pensions from falling below required funding levels. So that was also a big ask. And I think that would be a very difficult vote for many aldermen to take, especially since many of them just faced angry voters in the last election.
And some of them barely survived, and plenty of them didn't. They're not sitting in city council anymore.
Right.
Why is this coming to a head tonight? Are we at a, like, remind me of the fiscal calendar, or how does it work? I mean, is she talking about a current budget hole that needs to be filled by X time, and then we need to look at a new budget for the next year? Where fiscally on a calendar are we, and why is it tonight that this is kind of coming out?
So typically the city adopts its budget somewhere around Thanksgiving, sometimes a little bit before, sometimes a little bit since. So the city's budget operates on a calendar year, January 1st to December 31st, basis. Typically, during the Rahm Emanuel era, he put out a document that he called the Annual Financial Analysis in late July, basically sort of giving us all a look at sort of what the city's financial condition was.
And this is for fiscal year 2020.
Right. Okay. Right. We're through 2019. It might seem like it's still happening, John, but if you're talking about budget, it's over.
We're done.
It's
okay.
Done. It's yesterday's news. So we're focused on 2020, if you can believe that.
Mm-hmm.
So usually in July, late July, we know what the budget situation is. However, Lori Lightfoot asked for more time. She asked for an additional month, and that brings us to tonight, where she's basically going to say, here's the state of our city and our budget, and here's what I think we should do. So in October, she will deliver her formal budget proposal to the city council, and she usually does that. She'll do that with a big speech to the aldermen and in the city council chambers, and then we'll all get the huge, big 700-page budget proposal. And that will kick off a month or so of budget hearings where each department is called before the city council to basically answer aldermen's questions about why they need X amount of money to do Y number of things. And then it will work through the city council process. It will go through a committee. It will go to the full city council for adoption sometime before the start of the actual 2020.
So then I guess, and I'm asking so many formal questions about in terms of this, but it just helps me understand. I imagine some of our listeners too.
Sure.
So is tonight like a trial balloon where she floats some ideas, sees how they play out, and starts negotiating in backroom sessions with aldermen about what they can take, what they can't take, et cetera, before she sends out that proposal in October, that speech in October, so that one lands with a much more unanimous front? Is that what happens in the interim?
I think that's certainly her hope. She will start a series of four citywide budget hearings next week. The first is in my old stomping grounds of Jefferson Park at the Copernicus Center. And she will start that as a sort of a listening tour of, I laid out the problem. I gave you what I think we should do. And now she says she wants to hear from members of the community. What's interesting is that is the exact same playbook that Rahm Emanuel used before he pushed through that historic property tax increase to fund police and firefighter pensions, which I should mention passed, overwhelmingly. I think there was maybe a dozen no votes. So it will be interesting to see if that ends up sort of, that playbook ends up working for her the way Rahm Emanuel did. But she came into office promising progressive solutions that would protect the poorest Chicagoans, and she vowed repeatedly not to balance this budget on the backs of the poorest Chicagoans. The only issue is, of course, is that that's a lot easier to say than to do, especially when you're looking for $1 billion.
Yeah. I think it's really easy sometimes. I shouldn't say easy. I imagine that, especially in this election cycle, the progressive cause was certainly something that a lot of voters favored, especially in the runoff. The results speak for themselves. And I imagine that she was encouraged, and other people were that voted for her, that you also had a few Democratic Socialists voted into office as well, and you get some new aldermen. I just wonder that if there is a catch-22 in that now that she ran on it and now that she helped maybe get some other aldermen into office on those sort of similar promises and the similar that these aldermen who are there now, they're going to hold their feet to the fire. It almost ends up being like, all right, you made these promises, you're in office, but so are we, and now we get to challenge you on this too, and we're going to be loud about it.
Yeah, absolutely, and you have six members of the city council who are members of the Democratic Socialists of America who were voted into office promising a break from the old version of Chicago Democratic politics. And what's sort of, I think, an untalked about enough issue is that Lori Lightfoot was basically only endorsed by one alderman before the runoff, and that was Scott Wagsback, who's the new finance committee chair, who I'm sure will play a big role in pushing through whatever budget agreement comes to be. But, you know, she's not somebody who owes her position to any of the aldermen, and very few of the aldermen really owe their victory to her, which is really an unprecedented situation in Chicago history. However, the flip side of that is of course, that she won every single ward in the runoff in April, and she won 75% of the vote. So there may be an alderman who might not really like what she comes forward with or whatever the final proposal happens to be, which of course depends, I should add, on whether these proposals can get through Springfield, which has historically been relatively reluctant to approve anything that smacks of a Chicago bailout, whether they don't sort of just bite the bullet and say, look, she won citywide, she won my ward, she won everybody's ward, maybe I should get in line. Now, that would be very in keeping with Chicago politics, but I don't know if it will actually happen this time around.
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss, I guess you could say, if it turns out that way. Heather, just a couple more minutes. We did the news clip question a couple days ago, I believe it was about grading Lori Lightfoot's first 100 days. Not going to ask you to do that. You're an independent journalist, so I don't ask you to assign a letter grade. But I guess as you look back on the first 100 days, it's certainly been an interesting one. Your couple quick takeaways.
Well, certainly the honeymoon is over. I think the second she takes that podium tonight, sort of the era of good feelings, such as it was, will be over because these are hard and tough questions. So I think it's interesting to look at what she spent her initial political capital on, which was pushing through ethics reforms that had been stalled really dating back to 2016. And that basically gave the Inspector General a significant amount more power to oversee the city council and aldermen. And of course, that all comes as there are at least three and perhaps infinity number of corruption investigations swirling around City Hall. She also pushed through a scheduling ordinance that will require businesses to give their employees more notice of their schedules. And that was something that the labor community and the progressive community wanted very, very badly, but was unable to push through under Rahm Emanuel. And, you know, she also sort of put people on notice with the force of her personality that things were going to be very different. You know, I still, you know, catch my breath when I think about her tangling with Ed Burke at her very first city council meeting and basically telling the alderman of 50 years, who of course is now facing an indictment for corruption that he has pled not guilty to basically sit down and that she would call on him and, you know, when she was good and ready. So she's certainly set a new tone and she's certainly notched a number of legislative victories. I think the question is, does this budget deficit take all of the air out of the room to do other things that she has said she's wanted to, such as including pushing the minimum wage in Chicago to $15 by 2021 instead of 2025, where it will go to $15 throughout the state. So there are still big, heavy, non-budget lifts on her agenda. I think the big question for the next several months is how much else can she do while we're all sort of focused on this massive budget deficit and the city's sort of need to fund its pensions in a way that it really hasn't ever done.
Campaign in poetry, govern in prose. Mario Cuomo had it right. Heather Sharon, thedailyline.net. Remind everyone what they can find there.
Thedailyline.net should be your one-stop shop of politics at the county, the city, and the state level. And I think this is the first time I've spoken to you, John, that another one of our former DNA Info colleagues, Alex Nitkin, has joined us at the Daily Line, and he will be covering Cook County and land use policy.
Ooh.
And that is very exciting for us at the Daily Line.
That's great stuff. Heather, and one last thing I'll leave you with. The texter said, when I was referring to my number of $333 per person, texter politely reminded me that a lot of those are kids, and a lot of us have those kids, and they don't get to pay for it on their own. I know you would appreciate that, too.
I do appreciate that.
I hadn't factored that into the equation. Oh, yeah, that's right. Some of y'all have, like, five kids out there.
Yeah, we should really bring back child labor. I think that's a platform you could run for office on, John.
Yeah.
I think
that would... And here at the start of Labor Day weekend, no better time for that. Heather Sharon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, John.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Mm-hmm. Hey, good afternoon, everyone. John Hanson in for John Williams. Hey, we were halfway, right? 206 on this Thursday afternoon. I knew it was close to Friday. I knew it wasn't Friday, so that's how I was able to narrow that down. Just a gorgeous day here in Chicago. A little stiff breeze cooling us off because we're in the 80s. But thanks so much for joining us. I'm here till 3, then Ro and Anna take over. You know the drill. You know how it goes. I don't got to keep reminding you. But thank you so much for listening here. You know, earlier in the show, I was just saying we were talking to Mike Hammernick, and now we're going to be joined by Mark Hammergren from the Adler Planetarium, and all that leads me to believe is that, Elif, I can't believe you didn't bump in with some MC Hammer. I'm a little upset with you. I just assumed you were going to be able to do that, pick that up, pick up that cue, but you missed it. You dropped the ball there.
Oh, you should have told me.
No, I wanted to leave it. I wanted to see if you got it. I know that we start the show with John's open, and that's fine. I like tradition. I like keeping that going, even when John's not here. John back tomorrow, right?
Yes. Tuesday.
Okay, never mind then. Who's in tomorrow?
Dean Richards.
That's a good fill-in. Oh, you're going to be in for a treat tomorrow, folks. All right, enough about talking about John. He's not here today. He'll be back Tuesday. But we do have Mark Hammergren. Hammergren. Am I saying that right, Mark? Am I anywhere close?
Yes, indeed. Hammergren.
Hammergren.
You can't touch this.
Yep. Hey, that's a great name. Did you appreciate that name growing up?
I did. Not growing up. Later.
Yeah.
I'm not that young.
Oh, okay. Did they call you the Hammer when you were in school? Or
oh, my gosh. Yeah. I was Hammer all through grad school.
That's great. You're the lead Adler scientist, and we appreciate you stopping on by here. I got to tell you, Mark, I've been to the planetarium many times, and I always enjoy my visits there.
Wonderful.
And, but, you know, I've always been inspired by the Apollo program and known everything about the space program. But for some reason, until this summer, when I was up in northwestern Ontario, and we've gone there many times, and I've taken a look at our vast stars and how gorgeous they are, especially without any light pollution. But this past month, I was able to go up to Waupaca, Wisconsin, which is right in the middle of Wisconsin, and you still get an amazing view. And I downloaded this app that I could kind of point in the direction of stars, and it would give me information on the stars. And I got to tell you, knowledge is power. Knowledge is inspiration. I found myself just amazed at what I was looking at because I actually could look at and read a little bit about what I was looking at. I imagine that's something that you're saying. You're probably nodding your head like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Just a little bit of knowledge about what you're looking at just opens your horizons.
Mm-hmm.
Just really brings the immensity of what you're viewing down to your heart. Yeah.
I couldn't even believe I was watching. I was looking at this one star, and it was kind of like pulsing red, and I'm like, what is that? And there it is, the heart of the scorpion, and I'm learning about how far away these things are. And I know, and I'm sure some listeners right now are just rolling their eyes, but I could not believe that some of these stars are hundreds of light years away, meaning that we are seeing what the light they sent 400, 500 years ago. Some of these stars may have burned out. We don't even know about it yet.
Well, in theory. The ages of stars are so long. Like our own sun will last for another 5 billion years.
Mm.
So you hear about, you know, these stars that you look at might be burned out already. Actually, most of the stars you see are only a few thousand light years away. Only.
That's insane, though.
Yeah. So most of the ones that you see are still going strong, good. Going bright.
Good. I don't want them to disappear one night. I just learned what their darn names were.
That's right.
All right, so let's talk about this fascinating story I read in the Tribune about a meteorite at the bottom of Lake Michigan. First of all, I got a question, because we were seeing kind of shooting stars. We were there late July, which I guess was a good time to see that sort of thing in the northern sky. How often when we see a meteor or we see streaks of it or someone gets a cell phone video of it or something like that, how often do these things actually come and make contact with either the ground or our lakes or oceans?
Yeah, not that often. That's why this kind of thing is special. So probably only a couple dozen times a year, a few dozen times a year, are meteors large enough that they can survive all the way down to the ground, that they don't burn up completely. The normal ones that you see are really small, maybe the size of a penny, even
wow.
Smaller than that. Yeah. And this one, oh gosh, was probably several feet across, probably massing several tons, and it broke up, as they usually do along the way, and fell in a scatter of meteorites into Lake Michigan.
Is it a matter that it's simply a mathematical equation, meaning it has to be X big to be able to survive that reentry? It is essentially size matters at that point.
Size does matter. There are a couple other things, like how strong the material is.
Okay.
Like if it's an iron meteorite, it's likely to hold together more strongly than a stony meteorite.
Mm.
So what they're made of. There are a lot of parameters. How fast they're going. The faster they go, the more they break up, and
oh,
the more
wow.
they burn up. Yeah.
So a slow iron one that's big is going to do better. Get a better chance to come down to Earth. Now that I'm happy to know that it doesn't happen too often. I mean, I imagine scientists wish it happened more often so they could explore these things more. It just puts me in a little bit more ease of mind as I'm walking around the area at night or during the day, I should say. But what do we know about this one that has landed in Lake Michigan, or do we not know a lot? Is that why we're going to get it?
Yeah, exactly. We don't know too much. We know its orbit. So I was able to use some videos that were taken of the meteorite coming in and track it from a couple different points of view. And that allowed me to do a 3D reconstruction of its motion, and pass it all the way back into space to get its orbit. So we know where it came from in space, which is about two-thirds of the way out into the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. So what
sent it on its... Do we have no idea what would send it on its journey towards us? Was it kind of just stagnant in space, or has it always been on this journey, and that's the point at which we pick it up?
Yeah, it's probably been on that orbit for thousands, if not millions of years.
Jeez,
before we happen to be in the... Well, the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm. So what does meteorite hunting look like? I mean, do you have an idea that this thing is certainly down there? Do we know? Do we have some sort of sonar confirmation? How did you guys find it?
Yeah, so we haven't found it yet, but we know it's down there because it was picked up by weather radar. So the National Weather Service, you know how they can pick up hailstones and that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
They actually picked up stones falling through the sky. And we have recordings, we have pings from the radar, all the way down to about 7,000 feet above the ground. So we know really well where these things fell. We know for sure there were a lot of stones, and they came down in the lake within about a half mile. Mm-hmm. We know where it was.
And that seems pretty precise to me, but it's not like you can just suck the water up and look and scan over that half mile and go, oh, yeah, there it is. We're talking about what depth?
Yeah, about 200 feet of water.
Okay,
there's
deeper
places. Yeah.
And that's,
yeah.
But that is deep, but there are deeper places in Lake Michigan, so you lucked out there.
We did.
So how are you going to go get this thing?
Well, we thought about a couple different things. First thought was we could send down a remotely operated vehicle and look for these things. But honestly, despite there being probably a couple hundred pounds of stones, most of them are small, and they're going to be scattered few and far between. So what we came up with is this idea of having a magnetic sled that we drag behind a boat. So most meteorites, the vast majority, have some iron in them, little tiny bits, usually for the stony ones. But they're still attracted to magnets, and if we dragged this magnetic sled over the bottom, we could pick these things up. We'd just have to cover enough area to do that.
Does this device exist? Did it have to be built?
It did. So the design and testing and building was done by teen volunteers who came to the Adler. Yeah. So this was a project really driven entirely by the teenagers who work for us. Well, not work for us, volunteer for us.
Right. They don't get paid, or at least maybe some credit or something like that. But experience is paid in experience, of course, Mark. Okay, so you build this. Now, I got to ask you, because you obviously know a lot about space. Do you know much about the floor of the lake? I mean, are you working, I imagine, with experts who know a lot about the more marine aspects of what's happening?
Absolutely. So we're working with folks from the Shedd Aquarium. Philip Willink used to work
there. Oh, that's good. That's not too long of a walk. You just walk back and forth and figure this thing out.
You'd think we would have worked before on this kind of thing, but this is the first time we've worked with the Shedd Aquarium and the Field Museum all on one project. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that we didn't know was what was the lake bottom like around these places we were going to search. And it was completely surprising to everybody, especially the marine biologists, that the entire bed of Lake Michigan in that area is carpeted with quagga mussels.
Whoa.
With mussels, yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. So there's just meteorite stones in between these things now, or nestled on top of them. And so this magnet thing that's going to be dragged across, are you going to do it like a lawnmower where you just got to go back and forth and canvas the entire area?
pretty much as much as we can, yeah.
And what do you learn from it? So you get these things to the surface, you're able to see little bits of it or bigger chunks. What sorts of things can we learn about our solar system or the great beyond in space from gathering this material?
Oh, meteorites are wonderful. They're kind of like nature's own sample return missions. They are pieces of asteroids, which are the original building blocks of our solar system. So all of the planets, including the Earth, were made of this kind of material. But the only place we can find them is in the asteroids or the meteorites that they drop on us. So this gives us insight into our very origins. Now, when we can connect that to an orbit, we can get some idea of where they came from in the asteroid belt.
That's fascinating stuff. So wait, I am already confused now. What's the difference between an asteroid and a meteorite?
Well, it's a matter of coincidence, I guess. Meteorites mean that these are chunks of asteroids, for the most part, that have hit the Earth. So they come through the air. They're seen as meteors. That's the streak of light. And when they hit the ground, they're called meteorites.
Do you get excited when you hear about any time? Because you see these videos now and again, cell phone videos or police dash cam videos. Does that excite you? Do you have like a Google alert set for any of those things that alerts you when another one shoots across the sky?
I wish I had a Google alert for that, but I absolutely do get excited by that, especially when something comes down in kind of our neighborhood, mm-hmm. like Michigan about a year or so ago. And Wisconsin, well, there was one maybe 5-6 years ago that came down in the southwestern part of Wisconsin.
Mark, what's your background? How long have you been interested in what's above us?
No, I've been interested in this since I was a kid. I really got interested by the Apollo missions. I'm old enough that I saw astronauts walk on the moon, and that had me thinking, man, I want to work for NASA when I grow up.
Uh-huh.
And I stuck with it, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Adler Planetarium, of course, a great place to visit. You have all sorts of events. I imagine, you know, believe it or not, you know, I grew up in the area. I grew up in Downers Grove, so I'm sure we did field trips to the planetarium. And you learn to sort of, unfortunately, take these things for granted that we have them in our own backyard. Tourists, of course, flock to it because it's on TripAdvisor or whatever it may be. But I encourage everyone out there to be a tourist in your own town. I imagine there's listeners that have never been to the Adler Planetarium. Not that you have to make the pitch, Mark, but why should people come on by?
Oh, my gosh. Well, for one reason, you can come down here and you can actually talk to real astronomers. We're up on the floor and we're happy to share what we're researching on. So there's actual research going on here at the Adler. This is not just, not just playtime.
Right, not just relics or not just things to look at.
No.
I mean, there's actual scientific developments occurring.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And historians who are researching the origins of these various artifacts that we have, these ancient, historic telescopes, other artifacts. So we have a lot going on here behind the scenes.
If there was one thing that you don't know that you wish you could figure out or find out in the next 10, 15 years or so, a question that has just been bugging you, something about the space, what would it be that you could have answered? If you need more time, I could take a quick commercial break. I know that's a loaded question.
That's easy. Is there life off of the planet Earth? Is there life out there somewhere?
You know, I've been fascinated by that lately, too, and I don't know if you're familiar with space.com. There's a gentleman by the name of Mike Wall who writes for them and does great work, and they've got a lot of great articles. And we talk about that sometimes here on this program, about life out there and how, you know, generally, most people seem to think that, you know, why not? There should be a vast, you know, universe out there with a lot of different planets roaming around that are very similar to Earth, have the similar things. But I find it fascinating, Mark, not only wondering if there's life out there, but what the heck sort of form has it taken?
Absolutely, yeah. That's the biggest unknown. We usually start with life as we know it, life like the stuff we find here on Earth. And it's the most common things are bacteria or just microscopic organisms. So that's kind of what we have to look for if we're going to look for life out there.
Do you think there's other, like multicellular organisms out there, and I don't want to say mammals or reptiles because they could be anything. Do you think there's bigger things out there that we don't know about?
Space is so vast. There are about 500 billion stars in our galaxy, and there are trillions of galaxies out there. So the numbers are definitely in the favor of something else having arisen. Can we really be the only place in this vast universe that has life? No, I don't think so.
I agree with you there. Let's talk about really quickly before I let you go. I'm fascinated by this conversation. Rocktoberfest, Adler After Dark. What's going on? I see the logo, and it's a bunch of beer bottles turned upside down and shooting off to space like they're the Saturn V rocket. That got me intrigued.
Yeah, so first of all, Adler After Dark is a great monthly activity that we have here for adults at Adler. And Rocktoberfest, or Rocktoberfest, is we're going to have, it's like our Oktoberfest. We're going to have some brews from Empirical Brewery and Martz Brewing and Dunkhouse. That's the German celebration. They're gonna be here. There's gonna be a Oompa band.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no other way to describe a German band than that. I'm glad you didn't go for the official name, but the Oompa works fine for me. And I imagine there's conversations like this one that people can have with willing participants on the other end.
Absolutely, yeah. No, these are great times, yeah. And it's an adults only kind of thing, so it's a great date night. My, oh.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of fun, and that is on September 19th, part of the Adler After Dark program, Rocktoberfest, or Rocktober, I don't know quite how to pronounce it, but it's Rocket and Oktoberfest combined. You can do the rest. Mark, thank you so much, and best of luck. Can you call in and let us know when you guys get this thing on up and what you're going to do with it next?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I guess I forgot to ask, are you out there now? Are you on the boat doing this? When is this happening?
No. We only have a few expeditions each year. We've had a few this summer, and we're still looking through the magnetic sediments that we collected. So the work, well, is not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll absolutely let you know if we find anything.
Yeah, we want to be your first call. None of your relatives or friends. 312-91-7200. You let us know, Mark. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Another missed opportunity with no MC Hammer there. That's 2 for 2, Aleph. Updating you on the helicopter. We don't know. Even Mr. Bertrand and Ryan Burrow came over here. That helicopter just up to the east here on Lake Michigan.
Here comes Save My Zulu.
It looked like it landed. Well, so here's the thing. It went behind a little lighthouse. That's not a lighthouse.
Well, it's off the Chicago Yacht Club kind of.
Yeah, that's
beyond,
what it is.
Beyond that.
Yeah, but it must have landed. We don't see any water spray of it anymore, and it's beyond our view. But that was lower than I've seen most of them go over the water unless there's some sort of rescue. But like you said, Steve, there's boats right there.
Right. So I wouldn't think you need a copter. But the other part of it is, so when it got below the building before, we could see it riffling the water.
Yes, yes.
And it's not doing that now, so it must have stopped for some reason.
Right, and I don't see any commotion over there, so I'm not thinking of anything that, you know, nefarious having happened. Anyways, we'll see if we can find out a little bit more about that. I had a text from the 815, wanted to know, I was referencing when chatting with Mark Hammergren that when I was up in Waupaca, Wisconsin, we'd go on these night cruises, and you could see the stars, and you could see the Milky Way, and it looked awesome. And they wanted to know what app I use, and I actually got a free one. It's called Skyview Light. And what you do is you pop it on, and as you move around with your phone, it kind of knows where you are. You're nodding, LFD, do you use this thing? Or
yeah.
Something similar to it.
My mom and I use that app.
It's so cool. So as I go to the east, go to the west, as I tilt my phone up, as I tilt my phone down, it gives you a map in your camera, on your phone, of what you're looking at, the stars that you're looking at. And if you kind of like point it right at the star that you're looking at, it'll pop up with some information. You can press more for more information. It even shows you what's below the horizon too.
Yeah.
So it can show you where the moon is. And you're just like, if you put your phone down at your, you know, below the horizon, you can't see the moon, but it shows you where it is. It showed you where the planets were. I was amazed, Ella. If I had been looking at the sky for years and years, and of course here in Chicago, it's diluted, but we've been fishing up in Canada my whole life and seeing the stars. I never realized that you could see Jupiter Saturn, Venus, with your bare eyes. I've probably been looking at it for 3 decades, didn't know it was Jupiter.
Yeah.
And there it is, bright in the sky, the brightest thing out there. Learned where Polaris was, the North Star, Vega. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot of different things. I'll forget most of it here in the next couple of weeks. But
I love the mystical music in the background, too.
Yes, that does add to the ambiance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Except my brother was cranking Scissor Sisters on the boat while we were doing it. So it kind of ruined a little bit of the ambiance. But it's really cool. I'd suggest anyone that has any curiosity about what the sky is, or maybe if you have none, maybe if you are just, you're a curious person and maybe want to gain some of that in terms of what's happening in space, Sky View Light was the app I use. There's a few of them that do it, though. So
here's a weird thing, though, yeah, about that app. My mom saw some ghosts in there.
Mm-hmm. So you're, wait, saw some what?
Ghosts.
What does that mean?
A ghost?
Saw some ghosts in the app?
Yeah, like she took a picture of what she saw in, like, I can't remember now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So we were outside in the backyard, and she, in the app, you can focus it on different areas.
Okay.
And you'll see both what's going on in the actual place that you're in.
And a camera view of it?
Exactly. That's okay. What I'm trying to say.
So her camera got some ghosts.
I'd hold off on those. Elif, I'd hold off on those stories until it's legal after the first of the year.
Okay, Steve.
Yeah.
It's okay. I believe you, Elif. I've caught a ghost in a Snapchat with me before.
Wait, what? Yikes. But really?
Yeah, you know the filters where you can do it with a friend?
Yeah.
Yeah, something has just, like, attached behind me before.
Does it give the ghost a face or any of the things?
So it puts, like, the dog nose and ears on nothing behind me.
You know,
kind of freaked me out.
But we saw actual gray people sitting in the yard, and that's what I was
trying
to
get. No, did you screen grab this?
You saw gray people?
No, really?
Yes.
Do you believe her?
I looked at it myself.
I need proof of this. You work at a news talk station. Why aren't you breaking this over to Bertrand or something? If you see ghosts, I want to prove it.
Bertrand's going to be like, I don't want to do that.
Also, yeah, she knows better.
Also, all the ghost hunters out there are like, oh, Snapchat, that's how we could have done it. Seen where the little dog ears pop up or the little tongue that wags out of the dog. WGN, at least here on WGNradio.com. Did you just search, like, for stock circus music there, or is that, like, the It theme song there, Elif?
I searched creepy clown music.
Creepy clown music.
It's called Calliope or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, Calliope. There's a genre.
They did a good job. I'm definitely thinking creepy clown.
Wait, it's a genre or the name of a band? Oh, it picks up. Instrumentals, in fact, yes, as opposed to just the bell music.
Makes you think of a merry-go-round as well.
Yeah, a merry-go-round from hell. John Hanson in for John Williams until 3 o'clock, Rowan Anna. After that, you know how it works. Let's go to Mina Bloom. She joins me now. She's my good friend from Block Club Chicago. Mina, how are you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. We didn't do this story any justice by playing creepy clown music, but there is a clown roaming through Logan Square, and while that would worry me, apparently most residents seem to be okay with it. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, about a month ago, I first saw this person dressed in a full clown getup, going up to people and asking them if they wanted to buy balloon animals. He either had a fanny pack or he had a backpack full of balloons, and he would ask people if they wanted to buy them. I was intrigued by it, and then I realized that a lot of other neighbors were intrigued by it too. Who is this person? And all of a sudden, Logan Square has its own clown. So I set out to answer that question, and that's where we're at with the story.
So what I love about Block Club Chicago, and before that DNA Info, and Mina, you specifically, is, look, a lot of stories come from knowing your beat, knowing your neighborhood, walking around and just going, what the heck? And then figuring out the answer to that question. So how did you go about doing it? Is it a matter of just walking up to the guy and saying, hi, I'm Mina, what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's kind of funny. There were a few weeks there where I would people would send me messages. Like, I saw the clown, and I would be doing something else. You know, I'd be covering another story, and so I couldn't get to it. But serendipitously, yesterday, we were crossing the street at the same time. And so, exactly what you said, I just stopped him and introduced myself and told him I was a reporter, and I would love to hear his story, and that's how we talk. So we actually, interestingly enough, after all those people sending me messages, it was just me kind of being out in the neighborhood, right, like you described, that really got the story.
So who is he? What is his story?
Yeah, so he is a 38-year-old guy from Deerfield, and he went to Colorado State to get his degree in early childhood education, and mm-hmm. he told me that that's really what made him want to do the clown work that he does. So he really likes to make kids laugh, he likes to make people happy, and he enjoys putting on the clown costume and making people laugh. And he for years had worked birthday parties and different events and still does that, but he recently got his street performer's license, so that's why he's been out and about for the last 2 months.
Oh, so there's a license necessary for that?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I mean, you can certainly,
dress as a clown,
and go out and do. But I think for him, I think he wanted it to be official.
Okay, so he's all official, and that's great. And I guess I shouldn't ask why. I just, like, my first reaction was, is this person, I hate to even use the term, but a crazy person. Like, that's just what comes to people's mind. I imagine some neighbors have similar reactions, at least confused, to put it mildly.
Well, like I read in the story, I mean, clowns don't exactly have the best reputation.
Except Bozo. Except Bozo. Let's say that first and foremost. Yes.
Yeah. So people are scared of clowns. A lot of people are. So when there was a lot of chatter on social media, a lot of people were saying, like, this guy is terrifying. I don't want to be anywhere near him. But I think that, you know, after talking to Joey the Clown, I think the beautiful thing about Block Club Chicago is we really, we try and, get those human stories and, make it a point to, you know, to really dive deep with people and to not, pass any judgment on people.
Yeah, no, and clown goes around, it's not what I would do, but some people love clowns. It's only kids love balloon animals and balloon things. Sure. So, I mean, does he make anything? Like, can you just go up there and he's pretty got a good Rolodex of things ready to go?
Yeah, he said that he can make a lot of different things. He said he can make dinosaurs, bunnies, butterflies, poodles. He said that he can make fish. I thought it was interesting. I asked him what the most popular request was, and he said it's a sword, mm-hmm. but that he hasn't figured out how to make a sword yet, so he doesn't know how to, he can't deliver on that.
Wait, he can make a poodle, he can't make a sword? That seems like the easiest one. I mean, the thing is already shaped like a sword for the most part. It just seems to be, make the handle.
I'm not sure. I asked him why, and he just said he hasn't quite figured it out yet. He can make a lot of different things, just not a sword, unfortunately.
And what do I know? How often does he do this?
He does it every single day. He works, he considers this his full-time job. He's out in the neighborhood every day. So I asked him how many hours a day, and he just kind of kept saying, it's a lot of hours, many hours. So sometimes he works, 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. Sometimes he's working noon to 5 p.m., but several hours a day, 7 days a week, he's out there.
I don't know if you got a chance to ask him, maybe you didn't, but, I mean, he must be aware of some people's fear of clowns. And when you say 5 p.m. to 11 p.m., I got to say, my level of anxiety over a clown rises exponentially as the sun goes down. So, like, I'm okay with a clown from noon till 4, but come 8:30 p.m., my clown tolerance goes down sharply.
Yeah, I did ask him about that. I said a lot of people are afraid of clowns, and I'm wondering what you think of that, and also have you encountered anybody who's been afraid, of your presence? And he just, he really just he dismissed it. I mean, he said, well, if they're afraid, then they don't have to talk to me,
Yeah.
But he said, I think clowns are fun, and the costume is funny, and I think it brings joy to people, and that's why I do it.
Yeah, I mean, I can respect that, certainly. All right, and what's his name? What does he go by? Does he have a specific clown name, or is he just the Logan Square Clown?
Well, people in the neighborhood are kind of calling him the Logan Square Clown, but his full name is Joseph Necktow, and he goes by Joey the Clown. And like I said, he's out in the neighborhood every day, but he also does birthday parties and events and different things. He says he does a few each month, so...
I'm never one to judge anyone in any line of work that they do, so I shall not do it until I get a chance to meet Joey myself. I got to ask, though, Lauren Lapka, you know, you came out anti-clown, and now that we've talked to Mina here a little bit, are you convinced or are you more concerned?
No, I'm not concerned. And okay. I'm not one of those people that is terrified of clowns.
Right.
But I have not seen a very positive association with clowns in my past 10 years, at least.
I'd say about 10:30 at night, that's the last time I want to see a clown at night, otherwise I'm calling the police. all right, so Mina, you mentioned some other stories that you haven't gotten, you had to put this one off, obviously, and that's the life of a journalist. You've always got the couple on the back burner that you can't wait to get to till you have some time. One of the stories, I mean, it's got to be the Chicago story of the summer is Chance the Snapper, and you were the one to break that news first. What is that story, and now the learning that Gator Rob has a girlfriend here in Chicago from when he came up to catch that gator. What does that story mean to you when you look back on this summer?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I actually, last night and tonight, I am telling a story about how we broke the story of Gator Watch, of Chance the Snapper at the Hideout. So I've been talking about this a lot with people lately. And for me, really, this story was just about bringing people together. You know, a lot of different people, different backgrounds, different ages, all side by side at the lagoon, staring at the lagoon for hours. and, it, you know, a lot of people talked to their neighbors and they hadn't before that. And it, you know, it was a fun story. It was a light story. It was, you know, in working in news, there's a lot of doom and gloom and despair. And this was really, really a wonderful story. And the ending, was great too. Although some people would have liked to see Chance the Snapper stay in Chicago, but he is enjoying sunny Florida right now.
Yeah. I just cannot believe how many legs this story has had. And then we get these, imposter gator people that have come to the same lagoon. And then you learn that, Rob, the Gator Rob. I get all these names confused. What was the name of the first gator guy? What was his name?
So it was Alligator Bob, and now we've got Alligator Rob.
And even that, you would write this in a screenplay, and they'd be like, no, those names can't rhyme. That cannot be the case, but there they are. Now he's got a Chicago girlfriend. That's cool. But Mina, I gotta take you back to that moment when you did break the story. Again, Block Club Chicago, first on the scene, first ones to break the Gator story, which has had all these legs for so long. Did you believe it to be true? What was your initial thought when you first got this?
No, I did not believe it to be true, and I wrote that in that story I was mentioning. I really thought it was a log or a baseball bat or a plastic bag or something. When I got those text messages and calls from my editors, they were, you know, as they do, which I bless their heart, they're amazing. You know, they take tips very seriously.
Yes.
and so do I. And as you know, John, having worked at DNA Info, we take tips very seriously, and we really listen to our readers, and the tip came from one of our readers. So, you know, I hoped that it was a real gator, because I didn't want to be wasting my time, you know,
right.
trying to write a story about a baseball bat in the lagoon, but I really did not think it was a real gator, and I didn't think it was a real gator until that, late that day when we got really, really good photos.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew for sure that it was the real thing. So for many, many hours that first day, I was like, no way, this is the real gator.
You're not suggesting that Seamus Toomey would send you on a fool's errand of a tip, right? Ever?
No, never.
Never, never, never.
No, not at all.
All right, just never to not to have to put this on you, but of course supporting local journalism is super important. Why should people check out Block Club Chicago?
Yeah, you know, I believe that we are doing that ground level reporting that people crave. We are out in the neighborhoods every single day, and we are talking to people in the neighborhoods every single day, and that's how we get really great neighborhood stories that nobody else in the city is covering. And we're out. We're not sitting at our desk. We are out and about every single day. That's how I interviewed Joey the Clown. That's how that's how we got the Chance the Snapper story. We're plugged into the neighborhoods, and I think that people in Chicago, you know, we're all sort of siphoned into our neighborhoods, and they almost feel like small towns in a way. So I think that We have a lot of neighborhood pride in the city, and most people I talk to love their neighborhoods and want to be a part of their neighborhoods and want to know what's going on and deserve to know what's going on. So we're covering things on, you know, on such a deeply local level, and we're doing, you know, and we're using all those old school journalistic practices that are so, so important. We really are old school in a lot of ways. So I really do think that what we're doing is really important. And for us to stick around, we do need people to contribute. So it's only $6 a month. It's, you know, it's like it could be a coffee or two.
Yeah, and even one at Starbucks. I just got a macchiato the other day, a venti, put an extra shot in it, and there was over $6. Could have gotten my Block Club subscription, but good thing I do. Mina Bloom, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, John. Always a pleasure.
Always great to chat. WGNRadio.com. John Hanson in for John Williams till the top of the hour. Then Rowan Anna will take you on over till the normal time, 7 o'clock, of course. All right, we've got just a couple of minutes left. I got to ask you, Kevin Powell, we'll talk about sports here in a second. But if you, I don't know if you were able to listen to much of the last story. I was talking with Mina Bloom about this Joey the Clown who makes balloon animals for a dollar on the streets of Logan Square and sometimes works until 11 o'clock at night. And I appreciate Mina doing her due diligence and giving this guy, you know, a chance to talk about it. But if I see a clown, if you see a clown in Logan Square approaching your vehicle at 10 o'clock at night in any way, shape, or form, what are you doing?
Yeah, you're getting creeped out. I've seen sort of prank videos before where it's people dressing up as creepy clowns and chasing people through parks and like lingering around a corner. And that's just got bad news written all over it, especially in 2019.
I just legit worry for his safety.
Yeah.
You know, like he might be the most well-intentioned guy.
We're all on edge in 2019. Yes. All the time.
Yes. There's like, I mean, the clown even comes close to me and starts knocking on the window. I'm going through the red light, which isn't good. Like if I'm stopped there and he's stopped me.
I mean, he has good intentions, it sounds like. Yeah.
How many times do you think the cops have been called on him?
That's a great question. I should have asked Mina that when I had the reporter. I imagine someone has, right?
Yeah, how could they not?
I don't want to go diving through the 911 records for the last few months to find out myself, but maybe a task for Mina Bloom. I just didn't want to tell her that because she's such a great reporter and a sweet person, and she's giving him the benefit of the doubt, but... Man, oh man, that one creeps me out. Talking sports, Andrew Luck, obviously the big story. I'm sure you guys have hashed it out a bunch, Kevin. But like, when you put this in the pantheon of like early sports retirements, this one is really up there. I mean, you talk about obviously Michael Jordan in '94, Jim Brown, even Luke Gehrig. I imagine you could put in that. I don't know if it ranks quite that high, but it certainly is up there.
I would put it right up there because he was one of the most highly touted football prospects we've ever seen. He was the top overall pick. He played at Stanford, et cetera, et cetera. You know, when I heard the news, I'm going to be honest, this is not me like calling it or anything like that. I wasn't that surprised. I mean, I was surprised. I was stunned. I wasn't ready to see a message that said Andrew Luck's retiring.
Right.
But he has been through so many tough injuries, and there were so many question marks about the injuries, where it would just they would just kind of go dark about the injuries. You weren't exactly sure what he was dealing with. There was a lot of mixed messages, so obviously something was going on. And when you consider the amount of injuries he's gone through, and you take a step back, it's not that surprising. But to see 29-year-old Andrew Luck, who was a good player, but it always felt like he never got to where we thought he would be, where we thought we could say he's the clear-cut top quarterback in the NFL. He never got there, but he still gave them a lot of good games, a lot of solid years. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah, it's not something you could see the writing on the wall necessarily, but I agree. Now, what has your response been to, like, I mean, like some of the outcry, like Doug Gottlieb, I don't know if you've been reading any of his stuff. I just can't imagine people who are that in tune to sports and going that meatball over this.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I give this guy the benefit of the doubt. I think everyone deserves to, especially Indianapolis fans. You would think, right? Or is it just the hometown thing? I mean, I cried as a 10-year-old when Ryan Sandberg retired the first time.
Yeah.
I guess it's a little bit of that.
I think so. I think some fans, you know, of course, there was the conversation around the booing right when Andrew Luck of the Colts happened to be playing the Bears.
Right.
And, like, there was a lot of reaction to that as well. I sort of kind of... I didn't want to react to their reaction to Andrew Luck. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't want to say, oh, those are all those are all horrible people. You know, we were talking with Adam Hogue. He made a good point. He goes, that was the end of a third preseason game.
Right.
Those are the fans. The fans that are staying for those games are probably had a few pops in them. Probably
you have
the
to.
Biggest meatball fans you could possibly imagine sticking around for a third preseason game, staying that late. That's also something to factor in. Plus, there has to be some sort of instant reaction where you are frustrated. You can't believe the news you just heard. And I've even gone nuts on the fans that did boom. You're going to get some sort of reaction. And the reaction, I mean, really? It's so funny how people get on their high horse when situations like this arise. Everyone goes on Twitter and is like, I would never have done that. I would have applauded the man at the moment. It's like, okay, you know
would
what?
You really, yeah.
Maybe they're booing not just necessarily him. Maybe they're booing the fact that it's over.
Yeah.
That they're just frustrated. So, but maybe there was just some idiots booing Andrew Luck.
Plus, boos are really loud. You only need about 50 of them to really fill a crowd.
That's true. That's true.
I've been at a few Cubs games in the 90s where we issued some boos out to certain people at really long games. And you can make the TV pretty good with just a couple loud ones. Is Marcus Mariota going to retire tonight? Is that just going to be the Bears thing when they go to each game?
You know what? Also, in Andrew Luck's defense, he may have looked across the sideline and saw Khalil Mack, Akeem Hicks, forget this.
He's
done.
Like, you know what? I'm done with that one.
Forget this. So maybe Marcus Mariota does throw in the white.
I'm out of there. Anyone playing tonight? I haven't really.
Eddie Pinheiro is the only guy I think we need to look at. And I'm actually rooting for some nasty weather tonight, believe it or not, because I want to see how he kicks in the wind and the rain. I don't think the rain's coming until a little bit later, but it does sound like we are going to have at least some wind that maybe he'll have to deal with and get a taste of what Soldier Field's really like kicking him, because he's had good conditions here in just the one game. But I'm kind of fingers crossed for I'm not looking for nasty thunderstorms, but just something to maybe test the kicking conditions at Soldier Field.
Why not? And maybe they did this before, so correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't watched really any of the preseason. But let's say you're in range at like a 50-yarder and it's second down. You're not going to gain anything by seeing what kind of plays you can run there. Third. Why don't you take a knee a couple yards back on the left hash mark and try and kick on third down instead, just to make sure you can kind of set up these pressure moments?
Yeah, that's interesting, because Matt Nagy was asked about that before the preseason started, where he was asked, would you just kind of do some weird things where it's third down and you're at a position where you want to say, okay, can this guy hit from this hash, from this yardage? And they haven't really done that. But, yeah, you know what? I think that could be you also do want to simulate real game situations, too. I mean, Eddie Pinheiro kicking on third down is not going to simulate in-game situations. So that's something to factor in. But maybe it's second and 15, and you just run two cookie-cutter runs up the middle.
Yeah.
Where you're not really saying we're throwing in the flag, but you're also saying, no, let's line up a kick here.
Well, let's add the real pressure. You walk up to him before that kick. Call a timeout. Ice your own kicker. Go up to him and say, if you don't make it, you don't get a job.
I think
and see what happens.
I think they've sort of transitioned from the point where they were very much in your face.
Yeah.
This is a competition to where, okay, let's tell Eddie he's the guy. And let's see how he reacts now, where he is the lone kicker on the roster. And he responded last time. He made all five kicks in the last preseason game, including that 58-yarder, which he was super pumped about. So I think they were very much, okay, let's create the toughest environment possible for these guys. Let's see what they can do. Let's see how they can handle the pressure. Let's not run away from the problem. And Pinheiro's the last man standing. And I think Nagy even said this. He said, I kind of had a talk with him and say, don't worry about every single kick. You're not going to make every kick. So I think they changed the tune on their approach to the kickers situation quite a bit over the past week or two.
Yeah.
And I think they want to see, Eddie, you're the guy. Go out and make the kicks.
I'm sure they're looking forward to this carnival being over. Thank you so much, Kevin Paul. Thanks for chatting things. Speaking of carnivals ending, my show is just about to wrap on up. And Devontae, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing, John?
Doing well. Looking at those White Sox, they were down 9-0, but they're starting the comeback train.
Hey, so there's still time.
If the Mets can almost come back from 10-1 last night, the White Sox certainly can do it. You guys got fun stuff coming up today?
We do. Speaking of the Bears, we're going to have Jarrett Payton on to kind of preview tonight's game and also take a look ahead as we prepare on Tuesday to unveil the statue of his father, legendary player Walter Payton, and George Halas. That happens on Tuesday, but also just kind of give us a look ahead as we get excited about our Bears. So Jarrett will join us. Michael Steele talks about all things Washington. And we've got Timon Bradley previewing Lori Lightfoot. The mayor has got the big address telling the city what's what. It's not what we've all been told, she says. It's different, and here's how we're going to handle it moving forward. So that's coming up as well.
We're going to find out just how high that number is. Have a good show, guys.
Thank you.